This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Prime Time here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich, as Mike continues to try to talk me off of my quest to own a racehorse in 2026, says that this is not the place. Buggy horses for sale. Never mind. I just found a buggy horse website. We'll have to see what those are all about. Found one website, no good. 12 grand for 1% of a horse just doesn't seem that I'm never going to get the money back. They must eat 12 grand of food a month, right?
You will not get it back.
They probably eat 12. They probably eat 12 grand worth of food a month.
Well, with this, so there are microshare websites out there where you could buy a percentage of a racehorse. That's what you're looking at. There's additional, like there's multiple years worth of fees included in that cost. So there's a significant markup there because you're paying the trainer fees and the feed fees for 2 years essentially up front. So you don't get charged anything for the ownership of the horse over the term, which makes it attractive for your regular person who's trying to buy one share for $80, less attractive for someone who's trying to buy 10% of a horse.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, We'll see where this leads by the end of the evening. Now joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, Jeff Schwartz, former NFLer and former Oregon Duck. And that's where I want to start with you here in this one, as they will head down to Atlanta as 3.5-point dogs. 48.5 is our total here in this one, Jeff. Oregon gets it done last week, but here it is, the rematch with Indiana. What say you?
It's going to be a really good game. Look, Oregon's going to have to play a little better in offense than they played at certain moments this season to win this game, to keep this game close. I think it's a low-scoring game. When you look at the profile of these teams against the better teams they've played, they have tended to score a lot less points, right? So you look at Indiana first. Indiana against Iowa, I believe, was 20 points, right? It was 13 against Ohio State. It was 30 against Oregon, and that was a high watermark against, you know, one of the better defenses. Penn State took a last-minute drive, I think, to get to 25 points there. Look at Oregon, Texas Tech, right? 23, I guess, more like 16 points, right? First Indiana game, only 13 offensive points, right? They scored on a pick six to make that 20. And look at Iowa game, 18 points. Penn State game, 17 in regulation. So I think there's a trend with these teams when they play better defenses that they're just not going to score as much, right? They want to ball control. They want to run the football. Both defenses limit explosive plays at a very high rate, right? And even the first game, Indiana had 340 yards. I would take that on Friday night if I'm an Oregon fan. I'd take it any day of the week. So I think that both these teams are playing a style of game that leans toward an under, and they've showed this year against the better defenses they played, they're just not going to score as much, which is natural, and both defenses in this game are very, very good.
Now, we've had everybody come on the show talk about how much they liked Indiana in this spot. Oregon is able to flip the script on Indiana, what are they going to need to do? What are they going to need to control to be able to get revenge for that loss up in Oregon?
It's an odd feeling as an Oregon fan to have everyone pick against you, like no matter what. I mean, even in some games this year when people didn't like us, let's say Penn State, I mean, there was a lot of people were picking Oregon, but this week, man, it is like Indiana heavy, right? And so it's a different spot to be in where the sports books would actually need Oregon to cover in this game. So a couple of things. One is that just offensively, we've made too many mistakes in these games that are self-inflicted errors. And I would like to clean that up against Indiana. We have to run the ball better. Not better, more often. We ran the ball, strip out sacks, right? Because that's part of rushing numbers. Oregon rushed the ball for over 5 yards a carry with their five running backs, essentially, in that game. And we have to do more of that in this game, to run the football. The last thing is, Dante Moore is not asked to do a ton. It's just really, he's really not. But when he is, he's really good. And I want us to be a little more aggressive with Dante Moore and tell him, I think, you have to win the game for us. Where I think it's more about offensive line and running the football, and he's a complimentary piece. But when it's go time, when it's two-minute drills, when it's time for Moore to win the game, he steps up each and every game. So I think telling him, Moore, like, hey, you need to be, especially with a running back situation where we are down one running back to a collarbone injury, we're down two others to the portal, we just don't have a healthy running back room right now. So I hope they rely on Dante Moore to be more part of the attacking part of the game plan.
In the game that's tomorrow, Miami and Ole Miss, this is the 3.5s are getting bought up and the ones that are left are super, super cheap. So we'll call it 3.5 right now, 52, 52.5 in favor of Miami. Ole Miss getting some love here as we approach kickoff tomorrow evening. What say you here as Miami does kind of flip roles here, been underdog a couple of weeks in a row. Now they're going to be the favorite.
Yeah, different spot for Miami to be in, right, where they're the favorite. I was shocked at the Ole Miss-Georgia game. I thought Georgia was going to cover that game. They're up 21-12 after the fumble return. I'm like, here we go, and Ole Miss stayed alive, man. I think this game comes down to really two factors, right? It's how much can Miami limit the Chambliss running stuff, right? Like the plays that are off script, off platform. Those are not plays that are easily sustainable game to game, right? They're great to have them, but Miami has disciplined pass rush. They sit back in coverage. They eat the tempo up a little bit. They should be able, in theory, to slow Ole Miss down a little bit, right? And then can Ole Miss stop the Miami run game? Mario Cristobal, to a fault, is going to be physical and run the football. That's what they want to do. I'm not sure Ole Miss can stop. There's a wager out there, I believe, on FanDuel, DraftKings, like total rushing yards for Miami. I think it's 142.5. I think Miami runs the ball well in this game. A, they want to do it. It's what their identity is. B, their offensive line is good. They rotate three back, so they keep those guys fresh. And Ole Miss has stopped the run as well as the other, you know, teams in this tournament still. So I think Miami, just game plan script-wise, would be best to run the football. So I think that to me is a wager I'm willing to make. I think a team total over for Miami would be interesting as well, over 27.5. I just still don't have enough faith in Ole Miss. Maybe I'm missing on them, but I do think Miami's the better team and will score a bunch of points.
Yeah, over on DraftKings right now, 150-plus rushing yards for Miami, sitting out there at minus 105 if you want to get a piece of that. Heading over to the NFL, we got five great days here of playoff football in a row, starting with those college games on Thursday and Friday. Saturday night, we are treated to a divisional matchup here. The Packers taking on the Bears for the third time. Packers won the first game. Packers won about 58 minutes of the second game, and then we saw a crazy finish there to get the Bears a victory. Now we've got the third matchup here. Right now, Packers, yeah, 1.5 road favorite. What do you make of this spot here, Jeff?
Look, this playoffs to me is more about fading teams than on teams, essentially. And I'm just fading the Bears, right? This is new for a couple teams in the postseason. And it's new because they haven't been there with the current roster. And it's new in the sense where they're just going to play better teams. Now, they played the Packers before, so they're very aware of what the Packers are. But the Bears this year, their numbers show it. They struggle on defense, right? They're a team that relies on turnovers to force stops, which that's not a thing you can do in the postseason, right? You can try, but are they good enough defensively just to say, we're going to shut you down if we can't force turnovers? My answer is no. Caleb Williams is fantastic, right? The second half of the last game was incredible against the Packers. I think it was 14-3 at halftime. He comes roaring back, and you know he makes some plays. And that might have been the first game. It was a game they lost, right? The one the Green Bay won there. And so he makes enough plays in games, but he's still not a terribly accurate quarterback, right? About 60%. So I like the Packers in this one. I don't feel great about it. It's more of a Bears fade. I've been waiting to fade them for weeks now in the postseason, and the time is now.
Jeff, as we look, obviously the great equalizer as sports bettors is the point spread. So I don't think any of us believe that the Rams are going to lose to the Panthers twice in a single season, but we are now out to 10.5 in that one. Do the Rams go in and do they throttle this Panthers team? Do they kind of show everybody what they're made of, getting Devontae Adams back and all of that? Or should we look at, the 10.5 is still available. You still get the hook out there in the market. Is that a little disrespectful to the home team?
I mean, the problem is the Rams at times this year just don't finish games, right? And so covering a big number like this, when we've seen them blow a late lead to Philly, blow a late lead to Seattle, squander opportunities against the Falcons recently. And you can make the case that maybe they mailed in that game, just off a Seattle loss and they didn't really need the game per se. But that's a big number for a playoff game. I think the Panthers, they've earned the right to be here, right? But they have their deficiencies. The Rams run the ball again as they should. I mean, I would take the Panthers before I take the Rams. I don't feel great about either side in this one. But I think with the Rams and what they've done this year and not being able to hold leads late, I would lean toward the Panthers making enough plays at the end of the game to keep it closer than maybe the actual gameplay for 60 minutes was.
All right, Jeff, we got about a minute left here in the segment. But just a bigger scope out here to the NFL. Everyone's picking their Super Bowl right now before we get into the playoffs. If I told you to take one team from the AFC, one from the NFC, who do you got meeting in Super Bowl number 60 here?
Oh, geez. I mean, no one in the AFC, but just nobody. I'm going to bet on nobody. I want to take Denver, but I just don't trust Bo Nix, man. Last week, and you shouldn't judge teams off 1 week, but you're playing the Chargers backups and couldn't score a touchdown on offense. Like, come on, guys. So I think it's Jacksonville, which again scares me to win the AFC. There's a scenario where they have two straight home games, right? It's possible, and then go to Denver, let's say, or maybe they host the AFC Championship game. And then I look at the Rams. I think the Rams are better than Seattle. I know they beat them a couple weeks ago, did Seattle. I look at the Rams as being that team. Head coach, quarterback, good in the trenches, can rush the passer, have been there before. It's kind of wild. A 5 seed right now is the second best odds. They won't have a home game in the postseason. They have to play 3 road playoff games. But they're comfortable playing on the road. They're comfortable in weather and bad elements. They're a team that's ready for this moment. So I think Rams-Jacksonville is probably the way I'd roll here.
He is Jeff Schwartz. Again, he is a former NFLer and Oregon Duck. I know he'll be enjoying the games here this week as well. Jeff, appreciate the time, buddy.
Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Mike, don't want to ignore college basketball out there. Providence and UConn under a minute. Providence up 2 on UConn, the number 4 team in the country.
We'll see the upset.
We'll see what Greg Peterson has to say about that when he joins us here after the break.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is primetime here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich want to go right in to bringing in Greg Peterson because, Greg, we talked about UConn and Providence going to overtime. Is UConn down like 4 starters or something? Because this overtime line is 1.5. Why am I not betting a point and a half on UConn?
That is very wild, to say the least, especially with this being such a big overnight spread. You were catching like 10 to 10 and a half points with Providence. I personally took the points here, which, you know, when you have the underdog in overtime, this should be able to get there, but you just never know there. But is this also Providence team that they've got 2 really good starters out there in the backcourt, Jason Edwards, Jalen Sellers, who I really like, and they've been really good throughout this game as well. 1.5 in overtime, though, does feel a little bit weird, especially when you just don't want the underdog in overtime, in my opinion.
Well, we fired it. I'm not watching the game, so I don't know what's going on there. But, I mean, I'm like, okay, I don't understand the 1.5 there in that one. And I know Mike has a team that he definitely wants to ask you about, so I'm gonna wait and let him do that. But I do want to say we just got started Alabama and Vandy. What were your thoughts on that one heading in? That? We're still very early if people wanted to get involved.
I thought the total just went a hair too high, and I took a shot on Alabama. I was willing to take anything of 4+ with Alabama, mainly because Vanderbilt is now without Frankie Collins. That is one of their guys that does a great job on the defensive side of things. He does a great job generating turnovers. Now, Vanderbilt is much improved on the glass. You bring in Jalen Washington to go along with Devin McLaughlin, who was so good from a season ago. And Vanderbilt has been the real deal this year, that lone undefeated team remaining out there in the SEC, but Alabama is so battle-tested. They had to go up against the likes of Purdue in the non-conference portion of the season. They always play a stacked schedule, so I do think that Alabama is going to be up for it. I was willing to take the points, and total just got a hair too high. All you need is something like a 90 to 85 to be able to get you the under, and that's a big reason why I did take that along with the points with Alabama.
We've got one game that is yet to tip tonight. Grand Canyon headed in to take on Boise State. Grand Canyon, part of the Mountain West. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but this is their first year in the Mountain West. Is that right?
This is indeed their first. It used to be out there in the WAC.
There we go. Because I remember betting the WAC title game. It was over the Christmas, or over the, what was it, the March holiday. I was out in New York. I was sitting there with my dad. It's like 2 a.m. We're just tracking that title game. Love me some Grand Canyon. They're taking on Boise State tonight. Boise, 8.5-point favorite. Total sitting at 141.5. Who do you like here?
I do like the under, and I do like the points here with Grand Canyon. With Grand Canyon, this team has been able to do a nice job on the glass, top 50 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage. And that's also the forte of Boise State. Boise State allows opponents to grab fewer than 21% of their misses as an offensive rebound. That is fifth in all of college basketball. But it just feels like the Dylan Andrews experiment has not been working out the best for this Boise State offense. They've been well outside the top 200 with their three-point shooting percentage. Andrew Meadow has been nice for them, but the backcourt just feels a little bit disjointed. It's a Grand Canyon team that doesn't necessarily have the world's greatest metrics because they were figuring things out to begin the season. They themselves have been very cold from three-point range, so I don't think that you're going to get a lot of outside shooting in this game. I think that it's going to be pile-driven down low for Boise State. Currently, they're more of a mid-tempo team, but if you look prior to that game against San Diego State, they were about 255th in terms of total possessions per game, and if you missed the San Diego State game over the weekend, three overtimes. That is going to warp your entire numbers right there, so it makes Boise State look a little bit more beastly on offense than what they are, and coming off of a triple overtime loss over the weekend, I feel like this might be a little bit of a letdown spot for Boise State and a little bit of a tired spot, so took the points with Grand Canyon and the under.
Talking to Greg Peterson at GUnit_81 over on the Twitter machine. Northwestern and Michigan State tomorrow. What you liking that one?
I'm liking the under. You've got a Michigan State team that's just pounded teams into oblivion. They have held Arkansas, Duke, and also Kentucky to 70 points or fewer. They are currently number one in the country in terms of defensive rebound percentage. Fewer than 19.5% of opponents' misses turn into an offensive rebound. And Michigan State also has some really wonky home and road splits with their three-point shooting. They shoot just 32% from three-point range at home, over 40% away from home. I think that irons out a little bit, but it's a Northwestern team that really doesn't bomb it well from three. They're about 270th in the country in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. And with this Northwestern team, one thing they do a really nice job of is taking care of the ball, but Michigan State is not a team that really goes for turnovers. They just make sure that you don't get good, clean looks. With Northwestern, their bread has been buttered down low, top 45 team, I should say, in terms of two-point shooting percentage. But Michigan State, top 30 team with regards to being able to guard down low as well. I think that this is going to be a lower-scoring game. Both teams outside the top 230 in terms of total possessions per game. So one delay with Michigan State and that defense, and I'm in on the under.
Let's take a look at one of the last games to tip tomorrow night. Gonzaga taking on Santa Clara. Right now, Gonzaga favored by 14.5. Total sitting at 167.5. Do you like the Zags tomorrow?
I do, because Gonzaga has been so good with their defense at home. We saw it a few nights ago, the way that they just pounded Loyola Marymount. Loyola Marymount could not get anything going, because when you think Gonzaga, you think great offense, and it's still an offense that is in the top 25 in terms of points per possession, but you look at their home games, number one in terms of fewest points allowed on a per possession basis. This is a Santa Clara team that's down with their three-point shooting. They've been about country average in terms of that three-point shooting. They've been really relying upon grabbing second and third chances on the offensive glass and getting the ball inside. Well, with this Gonzaga team, eighth in the country in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage at home. Top 10 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage with Graham Ike doing a nice job there. Gonzaga, still a solid three-point shooting team as well, with the likes of Adam Miller and company doing a nice job from the outside. We've seen a little bit more Braden Smith. So I think that Gonzaga, a very complete team. And for Santa Clara, they lost a few days ago to Loyola Chicago to wrap up non-conference play. It's just been a little bit shaky for them. So I'm going to be well away with Gonzaga. I think that that defense continues to be rock solid. I'm also in on that under.
Greg, I don't believe that this is an actual school, but I'm going to ask you about Lemoyne and New Haven that are apparently yes. going to compete in basketball at some point tomorrow. I looked it up. Okay, Lemoyne is, in fact, a real college. It is in it's in New York. Look at that. Look at that. Syracuse, New York. For Lemoyne College. Bet you can't tell me what their mascot is, though.
Dolphins.
Iggy the Dolphin, though. Yes, yeah, it is the Dolphin, but his name is Iggy. Iggy the Dolphin there for Lemoyne.
A lot of Dolphins in Syracuse.
Which, yeah, tons of Dolphins there. What do you like about Lemoyne?
What I like about Lemoyne is that they're going up against a New Haven team, that this is their first year at the Division I level, and typically, when you're a team coming up from the D2 ranks, you don't have a lot of size. So that means that Shiloh Jackson for Lemoyne, who's been able to give them 8 rebounds per game, comes in from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. He should be able to own the paint. And what has really been rough for Lemoyne has been their three-point shooting. Lemoyne is outside the top 350 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. New Haven shoots under 28% from three-point range, though. And New Haven, they're just not putting points up on the board. 355th in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. Dead stinking last in terms of total possessions per game, but they also get blitzed from three-point range. This New Haven team is 313th in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Lemoyne, they shoot over 37% from three. That's a top 60 mark in all of college basketball. At home, 44.7% three-point shooting team. Lemoyne, I was seeing them as five-point favorite. I felt like they should have been a double-figure favorite here. This New Haven team was sub-500 at the Division II level, trying to make the leap on up to the Division I level, and right now they're getting a rude awakening to NEC play. So I'm in on that over, and I'm in on the Lemoyne Dolphins laying the number.
Well, Mike, it is Charlie the Charger for New Haven versus Iggy the Dolphin.
That's a strange name for a Charger.
Charlie the Charger. The good, Charlie the Charger has his own Instagram account. The bad, he's only got 1,500 followers. So nobody likes Charlie the Charger.
Rough.
No one likes him. Yeah, no, I mean, if you're a mascot for a college, I don't even care if it's a small college. I mean, 1,500 followers? No one likes you. No one likes Charlie the Charger.
Got to go with the Dolphins there.
Yeah.
Dolphins by the route. Let's so we got 5 days of college or 5 days of football playoffs coming up, including college football Thursday and Friday, a game which we probably would have expected to see in the college football playoff happening on the hardwood. Ohio State taking on Oregon tomorrow. Who do you like here, Ducks and Buckeyes?
Oregon opened up as about a 2 to 2.5 point favorite. I just flat out think that the wrong team is favored here. I'm in on Ohio State, and I'm willing to take a shot on them on the money line. This Oregon team has just been very lackluster, about 141st in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, about 108th in terms of points per possession. They do one thing very well. They grab offensive rebounds. Top 25 team in terms of percentage of the missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. Nate Biddle's versatility is solid there, but Jackson Shellstad has clearly been banged up all season long. For Ohio State, they're coming off of a little bit of a heartbreaking loss at home against Nebraska, but I think that they're going to be able to get up here with Bruce Thornton, John Mobley in the backcourt, combining for over 34 points per game. I think that that backcourt play is going to be able to help them out. And additionally, for Ohio State, they are able to own things inside, a top 10 team in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage. It is an Oregon team that allows for a lot of shots from three, and Oregon has been rough in terms of taking care of the ball outside the top 160 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Give me Ohio State here on the money line. And right now, seeing that total about a 152.5. I do like that over as well.
He is Greg Peterson. You can catch him on Coast to Coast Hoops, and you can also get him at GUnit_81 on the Twitter machine. Greg, do appreciate it, buddy, and good luck on all the bets.
Absolutely. Same to you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Let's go check in here, Mike. Did my first college basketball bet of the season. Guess what? 101.95. 101.95.
Let's go.
Free money. Free money. Free money in that one.
There's still 50 seconds left.
Yeah, but you know, let's not get into the details, Mike. Into the details of that one.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Primetime here on VSiN, and Trae Young wanted out. He wanted to go to Washington, and they made it happen. He gets traded for CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert. So there we go. So there you go. Trae Young to the Washington Wizards for CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert.
And?
Yep.
Is that it?
That's
the list?
That's all that's said so far. We'll see if something else comes through, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think you'd get much, but I thought you'd get more than that. Like that.
That's pretty hilarious. McCollum's only got to be playing like what? Like 18 minutes a game or something like that on the season?
I mean, it's one of those guys who had a weird career. Just kind of been shipped all around, never really found his footing. Yeah, like I would have imagined the Wizards, he would have gotten some decent amount of playing time. I'm looking it up right now.
I don't know. All right. Yeah, he's gotten 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, he's their leading minute getter, 18 points on the season, your leading point scorer there. I mean, I could see him being useful for Atlanta.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
I mean,
he's
useful for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not, you know, not someone you're really like. Trae Young 3 years ago was thought of as like a high-end asset, like a star in the NBA, and now we are being traded for we'll call it role players, right?
Yeah. I mean, God, I mean, I guess asking ye shall receive, but like, boy, again, we will, he will, it's $95 million to do to him over the next 2 years. And then like we, he's going to get a third of that after that.
Yeah. Know? I mean, he's not going to get another big contract.
Yeah.
This is like,
yeah,
literally the Washington Wizards where your career goes to die. Like that's what's happening here.
CJ McCollum. I mean, 18 points, 3.5 boards, and 3.5 assists. I mean,
he's not a bad player.
He could be a piece for the Hawks.
Right, but if you think about what Trae Young's value was 3 years ago, CJ McCollum would be like the also ran with a couple first rounders and a young player. Like, and now here we are where it's just CJ McCollum.
I mean, if we started today, by the way, the Hawks would be in the play-in. Like,
yes.
So, I mean, you have to think McCollum makes them better, right? He's got Trae Young was doing next to nothing. I mean,
right? It depends how you feel about Trae Young. Yeah. Like Trae Young was averaging more points, playing less minutes. Defensively, not as good.
Yeah, giving up. Yeah,
but he also only played 10 games on the season.
Yeah,
right.
Interesting. Well, it's official, so we'll see if anything else comes through. And if not, Trae Young was given away for a guy that's probably going to come off the bench.
Like, yeah. It's just crazy. Crazy.
By the way, do you want to toot my horn or shall I toot my own horn?
Matt Brown.
Yes. Thank you.
Is officially
1-0
on the season. 1-0 on the college basketball betting season.
They gave me
one
and a half.
He's now retiring from VSiN to live bet college basketball full time. Just overtimes.
They gave me 1.5 in overtime with the team that was an 11-point favorite. I mean, I'm going to take it. I took it, Mike.
Bang.
We got it home.
Bang.
Nailed it.
1-0.
All right. So let's get to our full power ratings here. And so we went 1-14 because we can, you know, basically give you an idea of how we think of all of these teams. Now, if you weren't with us at the top of the show, this is not an order of teams we think can win the Super Bowl, because obviously there's an advantage to a team that has a bye. There's an advantage to a team that gets to play at home. There's an advantage to a team that maybe has an easier path whenever you look at the bracket. So all of that stuff. But these are just kind of how we view the teams just in general. Our top three teams are the same, just a different order. Rams, Seahawks, Eagles for me. Rams, Eagles, Seahawks for you. Our fourth team is the same in the Bills. And then we flip-flop 5 and 6, Texans and Jags. I think it's going to be really tough for me if someone wanted to come in. And you can argue the order, I guess, Mike, of those six teams, but I'm pretty solid in those six being the top six.
Yeah, I'm pretty locked in as well. I think that if I had the Texans in six like you do, someone could try and argue me into the Broncos over the Texans because they are similarly built and you have a better offensive line for the Broncos. But the defensive difference to me is too vast. I have the Texans up there at 5 versus having them at 6. For me, the top 6 is a pretty stagnant one. And to be honest, the top 3 are their own tier. Like really the top 2 in my mind, the Rams and the Eagles are their own tier, but the Rams, Eagles, and Seahawks all would be number 1 with a bullet in the AFC had they been in that conference.
Yeah, so past that, then we get into the kind of like Broncos, Patriots, Packers tier where you have Bears over Packers. I went Packers, Bears, same deal, whatever, flip-flop. I don't really care. 49ers injected in there for me. That's kind of the middle tier, but all teams that while I can make a case for, There's something about them that I can't fully endorse. Broncos, the offense, Patriots, the run defense was just so awesome. The first half of the season fell off a cliff in the second half of the season. I have no idea what happened there. They can't defend the run at all anymore. 49ers talked about that, their defense, the Bears and the up and down and the, you know, having to play from behind so often, et cetera. So like teams that I like generally, but too big of question marks for me, I think, to really endorse.
Yeah, after the top six, to me, the Broncos and the Patriots are a tier of their own. The only two teams outside of the top six that I could see coming out of the AFC or NFC, right? It's like I don't think anyone ranked 9 through 14 on my list has a chance at winning the conference. I could see a world where either the Broncos or the Patriots find a way out of the AFC. They would need a couple things to break right. They would need to run on the right side of variance, but I do think they are good enough football teams to be able to overcome those other six teams in the AFC. When we get down to that 9 through 14 range, and we both have 12, 13, 14, Chargers, Steelers, Panthers in the same order, but then you add in the Packers, the Bears, and the Niners, I would be surprised if any of those bottom six were able to win their conference.
So if we look at the we'll kind of skip to the bottom. Panthers, Steelers, Chargers at the bottom three for us in that order. Panthers, in my opinion, I'm being dead serious when I say this, I can't believe I'm saying this in sports and as weird as sports are and all of that. Like, I think they have 0% chance. Like, I would give them 0% chance to make it out of the NFC. That is how little I think that they can play multiple games in a row at a high enough level to beat these teams that we're talking about. Like, 0% chance.
You want to give me, can I get 10,000 to one?
Anyone gives you 1,000 to one, you take it. Like, but you get what I'm saying.
Anyone gives you 10,000 to one on anything, you take it.
Yeah, I mean, you get what I'm saying, though. I mean, it's just like I have almost negative confidence that they can put three games in a row together.
Three together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say beat the Rams, and I was going to call you crazy and then ask for like 100 to one, not 10,000 to one.
Yeah.
But yeah, to win the conference, I think would be extremely difficult for the Panthers. Not only are you playing three, you're going to have to play most likely road games after this. If you are able to win, going to Seattle is a train wreck of a matchup for that offense against the Seattle defense. Just so many things that aren't going your direction here if you're the Panthers. So I'd be very surprised. That being said, I had to think about who the worst team was, the Steelers or the Panthers. I did not just immediately write Steelers on the 13 line and Panthers on the 14 line. There's a lot of problems with this Steelers football team as well. So I think that the Steelers also kind of fall into that. And I shouldn't say that. The Steelers have 1% chance to win the AFC. There's at least a little bit of sliver of hope. It's just not very big in my mind.
Yes, I would agree. And the only reason is because at least at times they have shown kind of like a pulse on offense. I know it's not regular, and I know it's not anything that like blows you away, but they've at least shown some competency on the offensive side of the ball, whereas the Panthers just don't. I mean, Panthers just don't. So like, that's the clearest thing for me is like, it's like I know you said it was different for you. For me, Panthers, the very clear 14 and kind of like 14 by a little bit of a gap. And then the Chargers at 12, it's mainly just because of the deficiencies on the offensive side. That said, I would not say they're dead either. You still have Justin Herbert. And as long as you have him, as long as you have a dude, I don't think it's like out of the question, especially over in the AFC.
Yeah, they'd have to sun run.
Yeah.
My issue with the Chargers, and this may not be fair, but I don't respect their defense like I do some other defenses in the AFC. Like, I get it. They are ranked metrically. They are good. They don't really have the elite pass rusher. They're playing a zone behind. The style of defense that they play is not as demanding on the quarterback that they're facing as like the style that Houston can play or the style that Denver can play or even what the Patriots can do when they're able to really get it rolling with rushing the passers. So, or what the Jags are doing down in Jacksonville, they are the easiest team to play against in that facet. So it's hard for me to get really excited about this Chargers squad, despite having Justin Herbert, who could sunrun.
Guys, whenever you head over to omahasteaks.com/VEASAN and spend $129 or more, we're going to give you 2 free pounds of cooked chicken wings. Also 50% off site wide over there. So go in right now, omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Get 2 free pounds of chicken wings and 50% off site wide. Please see the site for additional details.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Primetime here on VSIN, Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Super, super fun running through all of the different units there in the playoffs, trying to figure out how that goes about some bets and whatnot. It's super, super, I think, an exercise now. We just kind of, Mike, threw it together this afternoon, but I think it's something I'm going to do moving forward, like just every playoff season, is kind of go in and do this because you do get caught up in the minutia of every single, and just like sit there, every single matchup. We're just,
this edge rusher versus this quarterback versus this left tackle versus whatever, as opposed to kind of taking the step back and the broad look at all of these. And I think heading into the playoffs, it was a really eye-opening and informative exercise for me.
Yeah, I like taking the holistic view there, right, and looking at, okay, where do I have certain teams ranked, and what does that mean from a betting perspective? And for me earlier, I said one thing jumped out to me. Having the Eagles at two and the fact that I do like the Bears over the Packers, I kind of like the Eagles' path as well. If the mm-hmm. Bears win and the Eagles win, you get to go to Chicago. I think that's a positive matchup for the Eagles. And then you've got the NFC title game most likely between the Rams or the Seahawks. And when I look at the price for it, and you're getting, you know, plus 950 for the Eagles to win the Super Bowl, that ended up in my account because we did this exercise. I do like I don't like the Eagles as the most likely winner, but the price at plus 950 to me is not accurate of their actual odds to be able to win the tournament.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good kind of segue in here to just some of the playoff bets that we can make now and some of the bets that we can kind of look at out there in the futures market. And if you look at DraftKings, the Seattle Seahawks are your Super Bowl favorites. I mean, it makes sense, of course. They're one of our top three teams in the NFL. They're a team that gets a bye. They have a super strong defense. I get all of that. It is interesting, I think, that they are as big a favorites over some of these other teams as they are, mainly because you kind of look, and like you said, I mean, Seahawks at plus 330, Eagles at 950. You're nearly getting three times the odds on the Eagles than you are over there on the Seahawks. And you know, again, one fewer game, I get it, Mike, but like in a head-to-head right now, depending on the spread, I almost feel like I would be on the Eagles because I kind of know where this would land. I kind of almost feel like I'd be on the Eagles no matter what.
Yeah, look, the Eagles would probably be what, 3-point dogs in right. Seattle? I would be betting the Eagles, yeah. Right? And like, and that to me, the key here is if you like the Eagles for the Super Bowl, the key is that second round matchup. The Rams going into Philadelphia is a likely round two matchup. If the Packers win, that is a little more concerning, right? That's not who you want to be playing. But if you're able to avoid Seattle and the Rams until the conference finals, 950 seems like a pretty generous price there. It also led me toward a first round bet on the Eagles. Like I really like the Eagles this weekend. I think that they're one of the teams I'm more confident in. And you look at the Niners, they're 10th in your rankings, 11th in mine. Specifically the defense, I think, is really going to struggle. The offense, we're still not sure if we're going to have Trent Williams in there. I assume he plays, but he's not going to be 100%. And that defense for the Niners is just going to struggle all day with Philadelphia. Philadelphia opens it up. If they play like they did in the playoffs last year, if they push the ball downfield, create big plays, create running lanes for Barkley, I just don't see the Niners being able to go score for score with the Eagles in that spot.
So a number that was already in my account, but now that we've made the playoffs and now that we're here, we can talk about it. And of course, the numbers have gone down because we've got everything and all the paths are laid out and everything. But over in the AFC, I think through our exercise and through the stuff that I learned, like, okay, Broncos are your favorite. Okay, bye. I get it. Don't love the offense. And the defense certainly did not play as well over the second half as it did over the first half. Patriots, second shot, plus 390. Pretty good offense. You can question the schedule if you want to do that. I think that that's at least fair for us to do. The run defense that we loved about this Patriots team in the first half fell off a cliff over the second half. At least something there. Do you really trust that receiving core completely should they ever find themselves in a deficit, et cetera, et cetera. Bills, you got Josh Allen. That's great. Don't get me wrong. He's the best quarterback in the playoffs. But, Mike, again, defensive concerns, big playability, the wide receiving core, who makes that clutch catch, all of those things. And I just keep getting back to the Jags and Texans. Like, they're both plus 550. You could bet both of them and win money if either one of these teams make it. Like, what is the holdup in betting these teams at nearly 6-1 just to win the conference? Like, they don't have to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that is where I kind of end up landing on as well. Like, I don't fully trust the Patriots there too. I don't fully trust the Broncos at one. The Bills do feel like a Josh Allen team. Like, can Josh Allen just, you know, put the cape on through three games and move them on? Yeah, it's totally possible. the Jaguars and the Texans are more complete teams than Buffalo is, though. They just, Buffalo has the best player. I don't, like, again, if I'm going to lean into this Eagles opinion, Eagles Texans Super Bowl 35-1, Eagles Jags Super Bowl 35-1. If you want to go for exact result with Eagles over either of them, and I think the Eagles would be favored in either of those cases, you're looking at 65-1 on both of them. So yeah. I don't mind taking a big shot with Eagles over Jags, Eagles over Texans at 65-1 at each, or just take Eagles and Texans or Eagles and Jags at 35-1 to make the Super Bowl. I think that with the AFC is wide open in my mind. Outside of the Chargers and the Steelers, I think anyone can win. And so I automatically am going to gravitate toward the longer shots inside that conference because of the fact that I think that any of those five top five teams could advance out of the AFC.
Yeah, I don't want to misquote the numbers because I kind of leaned into exactly what you just said as I was sitting and doing this. So, Mike, Eagles over. So I have Eagles over Texans at 66-1, Eagles over Jags at 68-1. And then I just flip flopped it. Jags over Eagles at 81-1. So have those three in the account, because I'm again on the NFC side, I do think the Eagles have maybe a sleeping giant type thing going on right now with that defense and the way that they played, and really digging into me seeing how little they let people get chunk plays on them, which is just absolutely nuts to me. And as much as I love the Rams, and I've got all the Rams stuff from the offseason, you know, from June and July. So that still lives in the account. I'd be naked to the Seahawks. I don't have really anything, don't have much with them. And past that, I don't really care because I don't believe in the Bears, Niners, Packers, or Panthers. So I'm not going to say I have all my bases covered, but I've got a decent amount covered.
Yeah, look, I have some Packers stuff, which unfortunately feels dead now. Better than pre-Parsons numbers, which, again, like I had the man, that felt great when it happened. And now you're kind of sitting here, you're like, well, kind of feels like I need a miracle to get the Packers to win the NFC or win the Super Bowl home. I just, like, you look at these numbers, the Seahawks, I get it. They should be the favorite. I just don't trust this offense. I don't trust this offense to be able to execute at a high level against very good defenses consistently.
We've just seen it too often, right? That's the thing. We've just seen it too often. It's not like it was a one-off. It wasn't like it was a two-off. It was like a six-off. And, like, I mean, that's a third of the season.
The Thursday night game against the Rams, who was the better football team? It was the Rams.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. It was the Rams, right? And you got a punt return. Then the Rams special teams kind of cost them that game. And then Seattle went for two late because they didn't want to put their defense back out on the field. They knew what was going to happen there. I still believe the Rams are the better football team. So if the Rams have to go to Seattle in round two, I think the Rams win that football game. So it's hard for me to really get behind a Seattle price at this number. It would have to be Eagles or Rams for me. And again, I'm getting double the number on the Eagles that I am the Rams. It's hard for me to get excited about the Rams because the Eagles' path logically here could be 49ers Bears to get to the conference title game. That is a pretty soft path if this plays out as the seedings is expected to. So I do like the Eagles at plus 450 to win the NFC more. Like I said, I took them to win the Super Bowl at plus 950, and then I played the exactas and then some of the Super Bowl ones. So I want to lead into the biggest prices possible here if I am leaning into the more extreme ranges of both the Eagles getting out of the NFC and then either the Texans or the Jags out of the AFC.
What is the longest one that you would be willing to at least make a case for whenever we're talking about these? Let's just go with not even the exact result. Let's just go with a name the finalists. What would be the wackiest one that you would be okay with?
I'll go Bills Bears. See, I could see a world where
mine was Bills Niners. Just mainly if the defense can somehow stop the bleeding for a three game stretch, you know. And obviously we think the offense is going to be able to continue to do what they're doing. And then the Bills have Josh Allen. So
I guess I could make a Jacksonville Bears case at 75-1, which is longer than Bills Bears at 65-1. But there is a world where the Bears just sun run the way this breaks out, right? Where they end up with three home games, Seattle loses in the second round, and they somehow pull them out.
Now we get to the game breakdowns, wild card weekend when we come back.